Hi, I'm Ken Carroll. These recordings are provided by ChinesePod.com.
This is a Learning 2.08 conference podcast. This and all conference conversations recorded live in September 2008.
This theory, so that must be your signal. You know, it's kind of like after recess, the kids are actually in the room, so it's time to go. So we might as well get started. These sessions are actually about an hour. Most of them during the day are 45 minutes. So, but they gave us actually yesterday, our first morning session was an hour or two. So we've got till about 8:30 someplace. Just a couple of things to begin. All of the stuff today, like all the slides, everything, are eventually going to end up online, back in the form. So if there's stuff that you want afterwards, I mean, I'm going to put it all back online. I tried yesterday to get the slides uploaded. And actually, I left a slide share running and upload while I went out for supper last night. And I think it was 5.5 hours later, it was up to about 60%. So the slides will eventually end up back online. I will put them on the forum. And so you can access everything there. You'll be able to download the whole presentation and use all that stuff. I do really and completely encourage you to use the Ning site. If you find the forum with today's session, then take your notes in there. And just save everything there. It's been really interesting, actually. It's been really interesting as a presenter, looking back through those notes yesterday for the couple of presentations that I gave. It was almost like, you know, I didn't realize I'd said a few things, or, you know. And then I looked at a couple and went, well, I actually sound kind of smart. That was kind of cool. So I do encourage you to do that. It's a very good resource to go back to, and it's neat with all this stuff because even the stuff from last year. So please take your notes there. Please feel free to slam away any ideas that you don't like there as well. I mean, that's completely what this is about. So my name is Clarence Fisher. I teach grades 7 and 8 in a small town in northern Canada. It's Friday night at home. So I was going to say, you know, it's school there, but I guess it's not. It's Friday night there. And that's really what this is about. Okay, I really hope this turns into some kind of a discussion, so please, you know, stop me, yell at me, throw something at me. I'm completely willing to stop and go wherever we, you know, end up going this morning. The idea of this is really to look at societal change in a lot of ways. Okay? And if society's changing, what's the effect of that on kids? And then even more so, what's the effect of that on classrooms? Or what's the response of classrooms? You know, that we hear all this stuff about the world changing and society changing. And personally, I think a lot of it is true. Yeah, the world is definitely a different place than it was when I was a kid, for darn sure. You know, I'm 38, I'm pushing it, you know, fat and 40, as I tell my wife pretty soon. The world is a different place than it was. So the question of that is, you know, can classrooms stay the same because of that? And if not, what kind of changes do we need to look at? I mean, does it need to be total chaos, where, you know, just all hell breaks loose and, you know, you're running around wondering what to do? Okay, so that's really what I want to look at today. I'm all about classrooms. I'm a classroom teacher. I live and breathe. I live and breathe in my classroom. And so I'm really about practical things. And that's where I like to look at. So, you know, looking at society, you know, we live in a funny society when, in Wikipedia, when you look at Wikipedia entries, you know, Starship Enterprise has an 8,000 word entry and the automobile has a 6,300 word entry. You know, so it's funny what things are important. Call of Duty, the video game, is 13,000 words and World War II is only 11,000 words. And these are all, I mean, they might be different now. I pulled these off a couple weeks ago. But these are all current Wikipedia entries. Okay? Pokemon trading cards, 5,000 words, poker, 1,800. So you've obviously got a different set of concerns. You know, things are changing when we look at the kind of things that we're concerned about to compare to the kind of things that, you know, sometimes kids are concerned about. I have to write down my few stats so I wouldn't forget them. You know, when you start looking even at TV versus the net, 19% of people spend over 6 hours a day online, while only 9% of people watch that much TV. Okay? So, you know, not necessarily that we should be 6 hours with anything, but when you look at the difference in that, okay, 60% of people who spend 1 to 4 hours online spend the same amount of time watching TV. So if you're like a medium user, 1 to 4 hours a day, people spend that much time watching TV, you know, or online. And over 23% of people have a music subscription service, so like an iTunes or something like that. So really, where we're getting our media from even is very different compared to where it used to be. Okay, I mean, TV was king, and that's not necessarily true. Okay? Now again, is that good, not bad? Well, I don't know, but I'm just saying that it's different. And where people are getting their information is different, and so what that looks like is different. Because what it means in a lot of ways is we've kind of lost a common culture as a society. You know, I was saying in here yesterday, living in the small town that I do, I remember being a kid when we got our second TV channel. You know, and that was really exciting. I remember there being a big thing in the Snow Lake News, you know, CKY Winnipeg, coming to Snow Lake. And that was, you know, wild. That was fabulous. I remember that. And, you know, now I've got a satellite hanging off my garage with, you know, Bell Express View with 5 million channels with nothing on it. You know, my kids, I've got 8 and 10 year old kids, they'll never know not having high speed net service at home. You know, and my, so there's four of us in my house and we actually have 3 laptops, you know, between 4 of us in our house. So, you know, it's a different kind of information landscape compared to the one that we grew up in. You know, we used to sit around and talk with our friends about, hey, did you see that TV show last night? It's really cool. Well, when they've got 5,000 channels, you know, a lot of them probably don't even interact with the same kind of media. So again, what does that mean? There's a story that Clay Shirky told not that long ago about going to visit his 6-year-old niece and sitting down on the couch one night and, you know, turning on the TV and watching the TV, and his niece sitting beside him on the couch, you know, and her sitting there and looking at what he's doing, and then she jumped up off the couch, went around the corner, and was digging around behind the TV in the back. And he said, well, what are you doing? She said, I'm looking for the mouse. You know, that to kids this age, if you can't interact with it, if you can't change a channel, if you can't make it point and click and do what you want it to do, well then, you know, that loses them fast. Now, that might have to do with attention span, but it also says, you know, that they really expect to interact with things. You know, they expect to have a lot of say. They expect to be able to customize the experience, really, to meet the things that they want to do. Right? And again, that's very different. You know, when I had one channel at home growing up, God, if it was on and I was bored, I had to watch it. You know? I remember actually even going, and you know, again, I mean, I'm starting to sound like my dad. You know? But I remember having a black and white TV at home, and I mean, we should have had a color TV. I don't know why we didn't, but I remember watching MASH, you know, when they had like the bag of blood, you know, dripping down. I couldn't figure out why they were giving these guys coffee, you know, because it looked like, you know, I couldn't figure that out. I mean, now, I mean, my kids will never have an experience like that. I mean, so it really, again, I'm not saying it's good or bad, but it makes me wonder about the information landscape. And again, what does that mean for classrooms? You know, what does that look like? It's a constant surprise to those of us over a certain age, let's say 30, that large parts of our life can end up online, but that's not a behavior anyone under 30 has had to unlearn. So ideas of privacy, you know, we really are worried about privacy and online privacy. And again, I'm not saying we shouldn't be. We need to be safe. We need to be all those kinds of things. But to a lot of kids, I mean, it's not a big deal. Right? They put their stuff out there, and I mean, they need to be taught best practices and the practices to keep themselves safe and all those sorts of things. But for us, we really, you know, we don't want to put too many pictures out there, and we don't want to deal with all these issues, and for a lot of kids, it's not an issue. Right? They just post their stuff online, and away they go. Okay? So, again, is that a generational thing? Is that, you know, it's funny. I flew out of Vancouver coming here, and when I had a couple hours in Vancouver and picked up the Globe and Mail there, and I actually found this article they were running on the not-so-private price, oh look, I got really wrecked, paid for social network, didn't quite make it, but you know, the not-so-private price paid for social networking. Now I'm not sure who would do this besides a newspaper, but what they did is so they found 25 Canadians, just random people, and tracked them to see what they did online for, I think it was 6 weeks, to see what kind of information they could, you know, harvest of these people. And then they went to them afterwards, you know, these 25 people, and told them, you know, well, I know where you live and I know all this kind of stuff about you. Well, I mean, of course we shouldn't be publishing all that stuff and telling people all this stuff. But really, I mean, who does that besides a newspaper, you know? So there's ideas of privacy, there's ideas of being ethical and all that kind of stuff. But again, I think it's a generational thing almost, that a lot of people really, I mean, it's not a concern almost for lots of people. You know, our culture is really becoming one of participation. Okay, Henry Jenkins, talks a lot about the idea of participation culture, where we're really allowed now in our culture to put our opinions out there, to put our pictures out there, to participate in the debate in a lot of ways of what our culture is becoming. And I had a slide, and I think it was yesterday in one of the presentations, and I talked about it the first night, the TED Talks, about this grade 7 kid in my class who I asked about that. You know, what about blogging and what about Flickr and, you know, what podcasting, how does it change stuff? And her thing really was that you don't have to be a rich old guy from New York anymore to have your voice out there. You know, we didn't really have a voice, okay, in the past, but now we're getting that back. You know, you can be anybody. You can live in a small town in the middle of no place, you know, and have, I've got over 2,000 people that subscribe to my blog. That's more people than live in my town. You know, so we've really become a participation culture where we expect to participate in the debate, we expect to give back, and we expect to have an opinion. I mean, the U.S. and Canada right now, too, are both in the middle of an election. I mean, that ability to participate in that debate is different than it ever has been in the past. You know, again, is that good? Is that bad? I'm not sure. I'm just saying that it's out there. Okay. Another set of stats, over 15% of users, internet users, the entire internet, over 15% of people have a Facebook account. It's over 60 million people. I mean, we expect to be able to put this kind of stuff out there. MySpace has over 110 million active accounts as of last month. Okay. In the U.S., over 60% of internet users read weblogs, 60% in the U.S. But the two countries that I could find stats on in Southeast Asia were actually both China and South Korea, and those numbers approached over 90%. So over 90% of people reading self-published material. Okay, again, that's a real different voice. Okay, that puts voice in a very different place. Okay, so it's that idea of participation in media that is published just by regular people. Okay, and that's, again, what does that mean? What does that look like for classrooms? Okay, I mean, their spaces often look like this. It looks like a mess to us, where there's just a big jumble of ideas, a big jumble of stuff that all comes together, and to us that looks like a mess. But it doesn't necessarily look like that to them. It looks much more fractal. It's all the pieces of their lives, right? Their computer, their books, their Facebook, their cameras, all that stuff comes together somehow in some kind of a complex information landscape. For us, it looks like a jumble. Okay, to them, it really doesn't, okay? You know, that we talk about, excuse me, they talk about, oh, it's still there. Thomas Friedman and Richard Florida, I talked about this the other night, that, you know, Friedman says the world is flat and Florida says that the world is spiky. Well, we can argue all night about which one you agree on, you know, but the fact is that we do know it has changed, but and we don't know what that necessarily means. You know, what does that mean for our society? What does that mean with where we're going? I know what it definitely means is you need a different kind of knowledge to survive and do well today than you did a few years ago. I mean, everybody was looking for, you know, 80 years ago for four, you know, people that could, you know, when the bell rang, they went for coffee break and they could paint the door black and that was it. That's all you needed. Well, we know kids need a different kind of knowledge to survive and thrive today. So, you know, again, what's the response of classrooms? What does that look like? You know, the immigrants versus the natives argument. And Mark Prensky talks about digital immigrants and digital natives. I got to tell you that I absolutely reject this. Okay? I do not believe that that is true. And I'm 38 and I consider myself to be a digital native. Okay. A lot of people who are 15 or 18 hate technology. You know, I really don't think it is a generational thing. It has to do a lot just with interest and participation and the communities that you involve yourself in. So we know, again, that the landscape has changed. But where is it taking? Where is it taking? A couple years ago, I was supervising, I looked after the science fair in our school. Ended up taking the couple of girls who were winners and a couple of boys over to the regional science fair, you know, a couple hours away in the next town, and I remember, you know, going down to their room, they were staying with a female chaperone and knocking on the door and, you know, telling these girls, come on, let's go. And so while one of them was in the washroom, we were flipping through CDs, you know, a big case of CDs that this one girl had, and of course it was all burnt CDs to begin with, but I asked her, I said, what are you listening to? And here it ended up that this kid liked Norwegian death metal music, you know, like real rock and wild stuff. I mean, he had no idea what it was, but it was Norwegian, and it was all good. And I said, like, where would you even find this? You know, I mean, for me, I wouldn't even know where to look. You know, I went to the store and bought, you know, I picked one of the 10 tapes that was for sale. Oh, I want that one. You know, I mean, it's not, I didn't even have that opportunity to do something like that. So the places these kids get this information, it's very fractal, right? And it's very, you know, there's been a lot of split out there. And again, how do we bring that back into a classroom? You know, and in a lot of ways, I really think it is a benefit. It is a good thing. But we can't pretend it doesn't exist. Okay? We have to know that it exists. And we have to wonder about how do we look after that when we're dealing with that. Because people are really becoming content creators. Okay? The word that they have started to use now is the idea of the prosumer. So it's a combination of a producer and a consumer. And consumer really becomes a role that we take upon ourselves temporarily. You know, at this point in time, I am a consumer. I am consuming these things. But maybe tomorrow I am producing something. I am making videos that go up to YouTube. I am making a podcast using Audacity. I'm remixing, you know, some music that I found someplace and making my own stuff. So consumer becomes a temporary role. You know, which is very different because we used to all, I mean, we were the market, right? We were like the sheep that, you know, Tide advertised to, and, you know, they pointed at us and said, you little people, you know, you're the consumers, you know, buy my stuff. But that's not really true anymore. As we've gained the tools, as we've gained the voice to have this stuff, we become prosumers instead. Okay, where a lot of culture is remixed. How many of you have ever heard of the little free download program called Scratch? Comes out of MIT. What it is like a little, it's like a 3D animation program. Comes out of MIT. It's free, wonderful stuff. Please go get it, check it out. But with Scratch, what it is they have, it comes out of MIT, and MIT has developed a community, kind of like a YouTube for Scratch. Okay? And there's also a whole set of forums and communities, so kids who download it and make little movies and do stuff can go back there and talk to other people about what they've made and how do I do this and hey, how did you do that? And I saw Mitch Resnick, the guy from MIT who made that program this summer, and what he talked about is how over 25% of the stuff on Scratch is actually remixed stuff. So it's stuff that some kid has made, and what's really cool with it is you can download it. So if you make something, I can download your project. And I can look at the little bit of code, like it's very simple computer code, basically like you snap blocks together, walk 100 steps, you know, turn left, say hello, you know, do whatever. It's just snapping blocks together. But it's actually a very powerful kind of simple programming language to start talking to kids about programming. But what you can do with Scratch is you can download somebody else's stuff and then look at the code and then figure it out. Right? Hey, I know how to do this. And then you can change that, add your own stuff to it, and then re-upload it. Okay, so that's like the idea of a remix, that you take somebody else's stuff and deal with it. Again, we never used to be able to do that. Right? There's a lot of stuff out there, really, that gives you that opportunity to participate and look at things in a new way. Okay? And often we see that coming back, you know, in our culture all the time. You know, we see that kind of stuff all the time. How many of you remember you know, the Eye of the Tiger song, you know, and how many places you used to see that, you know, used to show up all over the place and things. You know, well, here's another version of it. Some of my kids in class found this, and they said, you know, Mr. Fisher, you grew up in the 80s, didn't you? And I said, yeah, like, no, you don't want to, mind you, it's all coming back now, you know, you're around, all the kids got their collars up and stuff, and they said, oh, we got to show you this, you know, you remember Eye of the Tiger? And I'm like, yeah, I think so. So, I mean, this is how all this stuff is coming back, right? I mean, it comes back to haunt you almost. Now, this is obviously an official remix, as it's from Starbucks, but you go online, all this stuff about fan fiction, for example, and you can search out fan fiction sites and find all the people that are writing, like, the next chapters of Harry Potter magazines. You know, they're writing, you know, 58,000 Star Wars stories and whatever it is. And that's all giving us a way to...
This and all Learning 2.08 podcasts are released under a Creative Commons 3.0 Share Alike license. To learn more about the Learning 2.08 conference, visit our website at learning2cn.ning.com.